clock at 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal.
Rainbows high and deep into the end zone, and it is caught. Caught for a touchdown. A leaping touchdown catch.
Here he goes. He'll be chased, and he is gone. 97 yards. Oh, what a way to start.
Does he get both feet in right here at the end, Jim?
What are they going to roll it? He caught it? Touchdown! He did what?
He runs to the 50. He runs to the 40. The guy is drunk, but there he goes.
We are seeing another spectacular effort by Marino, who fires. Touchdown!
Oh, that's loose.
Allen steps up.
Jumps over the defenders to pick up the first.
Says a prayer.
Stop it!
Oh, please!
What a catch!
That's insane!
The game's final play is a Wilson lock to the end zone, which is fought for by Tate with Jennings simultaneous. Who has it? Who do they give it to? Touchdown!
All right, everybody. I am going to the defensive side of the football. I'm going to go to that Dallas-Philadelphia game. I think we're going to see at least 10 sacks in that game as the defenses get all over those opposing quarterbacks. It's going to be a slugfest, I think. So let's see what happens. 10 sacks combined between those two teams.
All right, folks. Here we go. I'm down 0-3, but here we go. I'm getting one this week. Let's go to Thursday Night Football. I totally believe in the Tennessee Titans and Will Levis. I also believe in the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think this is going to be a high-scoring game. I'm predicting a shootout. Both quarterbacks go for 3+ total touchdowns, so at least 3 total touchdowns from each starting quarterback in this game. Be one of the best games of the week.
All right, looks like I don't need to break the huddle because I'm all by myself. That's right, all of you listeners, welcome in. My name is Josh Lapping, and you are listening to Solo Catch today. My co-host Adam Jeffrey Rossi is on his bye week. It is week 10 in the NFL, and we have hit the simultaneous catch bye weeks. But we will have some fun here today, I'm sure. So let's get right into the show. You heard us, our friends' fortunes from last week. We were both wrong. I was actually really surprised by Adams. It was fun. I appreciated it. It would have been a heck of a game if that had happened. We did have a lower scoring affair in that game. Kenny Pickett did finally hit Deontay Johnson for the first time in Kenny Pickett's career for a Deontay Johnson touchdown. He knew it was coming. He had something like 160 catches before he got that touchdown, but he finally got on the board with that one. Will Levis did have his team in a position to win the game at the end, but did throw a back-breaking interception to Quan Alexander. It was a fun game. Najee Harris got going a little bit. Obviously, King Henry was pretty involved and all of those good things. But at the end of the day, the Pittsburgh Steelers, despite being outgained in yardage once again, did come out victorious. I don't know what to say about these Steelers. They are quite the conundrum. Pretty weird. But I'll talk about them in a little while as well. My friend's fortune was also wrong. 8 sacks. 8 sacks was the total in that game. But really what I thought was pivotal was before the final gasp drive by Dallas, which was just a weird tale of penalties, getting them moved all the way down the field and then backed up on the field from the 6-yard line. Oh my gosh, how heartbreaking. But it was on the second to final drive when Dallas really wanted to take the game and claim it as their own, right? It was that Philadelphia pass defense. They came up with 2 key sacks on that drive that really helped clamp that down and add that added pressure at the end of the game. So didn't quite hit 10, almost, but not quite. They still had a really great game. It was a great game, and we'll talk about that later on down the road as well here in a little while. But first, let's get into some rant, some rave, and some recall. I'm just going to do a little bit of a hodgepodge, if you will. You know, going back to last week, one of the cold reads Adam asked me, the actually only cold read he asked me, was why had Josh McDaniels not been fired yet? I threw up my hand, I said some funny things about the Bunny Ranch and all that jazz, but a mere, I don't know, 13 hours later, 12 hours later, 8 hours later, I'm not exactly sure of the timeline, Josh McDaniels had been fired. The news broke. They cleaned house. They fired Josh McDaniels. They also fired the GM, so they are going with a clean slate, and that meant interim head coach was put into place, and that was Antonio Pierce. He was the linebacker coach of the team, so didn't go with the defensive coordinator, Patrick Graham. There is also an interim offensive coordinator right now because Josh McDaniels did call those offensive play calls, and that is Bo Hardigree. I believe that's how you say it. If not, Bo, excuse me. But for now, it is interim head coach Antonio Pierce. He was, quote, a Raider for life. So the Las Vegas Raiders starting new again. This has been a big thing under the current owner. So we've seen a lot of head coaches there, a lot of interim coaches there. We'll have to see if they get things right, but they sure did this past week against the New York Football Giants. And so we have to give a rave about Antonio Pierce. It really just felt like the Vegas Raiders came to life under this game. And now, granted, they were playing the New York Giants, like we said, but they still came out and they looked like they had so much cohesion and synergy on the team. And that's what we talked about last week. We talked about how that wasn't being shown under Josh McDaniels. We'll see if it is the new interim head coach thing. We saw it last year when we saw it last year with the Colts. We saw it when Jeff Saturday took over. They won that game against the Raiders of all teams. But this kind of act can definitely infuse excitement and energy into a team. We'll see if it carries over, because like I said, the Giants a struggling team right now, especially as Daniel Jones goes down once again, and we will talk about that in a little bit, unfortunately for him, going down with what is believed to be a torn ACL. But yeah, right now we have to focus on those Raiders, Antonio Pierce, about how the energy and the spirit and the passion he brought. I thought he was very candid talking about the game as he prepared. He said he's not going to be perfect. He wasn't going to be the smartest guy out there. He wasn't going to make all the correct decisions, but he was going to rely on his feel, and he was going to rely on the coaches surrounding him, and he was going to rely on the players out there on the field to execute and do what they did. Aiden O'Connell getting his second career start. They benched Jimmy Garoppolo after the Josh McDaniels firing. So a lot of changes came in there in Vegas this week, and they came out and they played so well. They played with fire. They played with synergy. They played with cohesion. And it was just really great to see for those Vegas Raiders. Something that I want to give a rave about is the Minnesota Vikings. They came out and they started 1-4, everybody, right? We left them for dead. Neither Adam or I had them in our postseason playoff schedule right now, or when we did it earlier on in the season. Then Kirk Cousins goes on a hot streak. They get to 4-4, and unfortunately Kirk Cousins goes down with a season-ending injury. So what did the Vikings do with the trade deadline? We talked about it last week. They went and traded for Joshua Dobbs. Now, that wasn't planning to be the starter this week against the Falcons. Jaren Hall was slated to get the start, and he looked good. He looked really good. He started 5 for 6, 78 yards. He drove the ball all the way down to the field into the red zone, and then he scrambled. He was moving. He was scrambled for the goal line, and unfortunately was diagnosed with a concussion on a pretty hard hit from a corner. It was a great, great defensive play. And then came in the guy that had been there for just a few days, Joshua Dobbs, and he absolutely deserves a rave. I mean, he wasn't exactly gaudy with his stats, 20 of 30, 158 yards, 2 touchdowns, but he did do a lot on the ground as well, 7 carries for 66 yards, including one of the most crazy awesome scrambles I've seen in a long time on a 4th and, I can't remember if it was 4th and 4 or 4th and 3, but awesome scramble, and he also scored a touchdown on the ground. But Joshua Dobbs has been a player this year that has just been so, so steady. Maybe not spectacular, maybe not the sexiest quarterback out there in terms of stats or production or even technique, but he is just being consistently good and getting things done and being a leader for the teams that he's been on. And for a journeyman quarterback that I think this is his 5th team, I believe, I mean, you have to absolutely applaud for that guy and say he is crushing it. This could be a crushing it segment. He's doing so well. And Minnesota now being 5-4 after a 1-4 start. I mean, you have to feel good about that team. Cam Akers did go down with an injury, which is unfortunate. Cam Akers is a running back that I really like. Maybe the segments don't necessarily like that or think he's the best back. I'm not saying he's the best back, but he is a back that I really do like. So him going down with an injury in the opposite leg that he compared to what he suffered to last year, I feel for the guy. I feel bad that he is dealing with that right now. But we'll have to see how they respond. More Alexander Mattison. He's going to take a shot. He's not going to throw it away. So we will see what happens with the Minnesota Vikings as we move forward. Some other news and notes before we get into the meat and potatoes of the show. Kyler Murray is expected to be back, everybody. We've been talking about it for a long time. We've been waiting after the injury last year. He is slated to start unless there is something that happens this week in practice that is a setback. So Jonathan Gannon is getting ready to have Kyler Murray out there for the remainder of the season. I'm so fascinated to see what happens. I'm so fascinated to see if this is an audition for, I think that's really what it is. It is a 2-month audition, whether or not it is to remain the starting quarterback of the Arizona Cardinals, or if it's an audition for the other teams around the league, if Arizona starts to, or wants to start anew and start fresh. I think that may depend on how well Murray does in terms of wins and losses, not necessarily stats. I mean, if he comes out there and does really, really well, I think that makes him even just more attractive for trade bait versus saying you're going to be the starting quarterback if they lose a lot of games, because I do think the Cardinals are a little bit weary of certain things. This is pure speculation. There are no sources that I've seen that say this in the last few days or whatnot, but the question marks around Kyler Murray for a long time have been the work ethic and the injury history, and now both of those things throughout the course of his young career. He's only 26 years old. He might be 27 years old. Could check that. So stat guy, check me out there, 26 or 27 years old. We've seen the work ethic be an issue about, you know, Call of Duty and video games and watching film and putting in the contract about that he has to have so much time in the film room and then taking that out after it was complained about. And then the injury history, we starting to see the chinks in the armor. So if he comes out and performs really, really well on the field, but maybe that doesn't translate to wins and losses, that will make it even more appealing. You know, Adam said, I'd love to see him in Atlanta. I think that'd be so fun as well. I think that'd be great. And that's actually who the Cardinals are playing this week. So they'll get a front row view of the new Kyler Murray coming out. So we'll have to see whether or not that happens. Carson Wentz is back in the NFL, everybody. He is signed with the LA Rams to be Matthew Stafford's backup. Brett Rippon has been waived, so he was not able to rip it quite as much against the Green Bay Packers this week, but Carson Wentz has another shot in the NFL. The pressure's not on him right now to be the starting quarterback, but I think that's really good. You know, he's been training. There was a really charming picture in the offseason of him wearing a piece of uniform from every team that he's been on, excuse me, thus far. You know, to get back into an NFL organization, to be around a head coach like Sean McVay that is very, very intelligent, to maybe revitalize this. Or you know what? You know, I think the pressure might be off Carson Wentz for good to be an NFL starting quarterback. We'll have to see. But I think he can definitely be a really, really high-end backup. I like that move a lot, especially after we saw the backup struggle so greatly against Green Bay. I mean, I will have to check. Let's pull up Stat Guy real fast. And I believe that Brett Rippon did almost next to nothing against the Packers. Pulling it up, Stat Guy is helping me out. Yeah, Brett Rippon against the Packers was 13 of 28, 130 yards, and an interception in a game where really until the fourth quarter when the Packers pulled away, it was anybody's game, right? So if you had a more stabilized quarterback situation there, that was a game that you could have easily won. So going and getting a more reliable backup for the Rams, I think it's a great move for them. So I applaud that there as well. And then I don't think this comes as necessarily surprising or shocking news or whatnot, but Titans quarterback Will Levis has officially been named the starter. Ryan Tannehill is the backup. We talked about it last week. We talked about would Ryan Tannehill be traded at the trade deadline or whatnot. That did not happen, so he is officially the backup to the Tennessee Titans. Will Levis didn't necessarily light it up against the Pittsburgh Steelers, like Adam said he would, but it was still a good showing from the rookie quarterback, something that I feel like obviously gave Mike Vrabel and the Titans organization enough confidence moving forward to be like, you know what, this is our guy, and he can do some good things. He was 22 of 39, 262 yards, threw that interception at the very end, which was the backbreaker, like I said, but certainly had the moxie, the confidence in that game on the road in a hostile environment of Pittsburgh to show that he can absolutely be a franchise guy. And, you know, for a guy that we talked about could go as high as number two overall in draft season, he's done nothing to prove anything, but he deserves to be here. He belongs to be out on the field, and I'm excited to see this guy get a shot. I think it can only continue to grow and get better. We'll see what happens with the Titans organization. I feel really good about this move. I feel good about, you know, you get to see what you have in this kid who's already shown a lot of promise in two starts. And if it falls flat on its face or he gets injured, you know you have Ryan Tannehill there, a guy that you believed in at the start of the year to be your leader, to be your starter. If anything were to happen in this situation, you know you absolutely have that guy there as a safety net as well. Oh my gosh. All right, let's get into some week in review. The first game, the Sunday morning game in Frankfurt, Germany, the Miami Dolphins taking on the home game, or team, I should say, Kansas City Chiefs. That was a 21-14 victory for the Kansas City Chiefs. Thought that would happen in Pal's picks. I thought this was actually a pretty low-scoring game, pretty sloppy from both teams. I don't know if sloppy is the right word. I will say I wasn't able to watch this game with great concentration. I was traveling. I was flying during this game. So as I was maneuvering through the airport, I was trying to listen to it on the radio. And then when I got the chance, I was pulling it up on the iPad and then listening to it as much as I could before I took off, and then checking as soon as I got on a different plane and whatnot. So I wasn't able to fully watch this or follow it. So I know it was a tale of two halves. 21 straight points for the Chiefs in the first half, and then 14 points for the Dolphins in the third quarter. The fourth quarter was blanked, 0-0. The Dolphins did have a chance at the very end, but they did have some on a third down, a really bad pass by Tua Tagovailoa, and then on the fourth down play, the pivotal one, there was a botched snap. Tua did take that on himself and say that was his fault and whatnot. So we did see the Chiefs improve to 7-2, the Dolphins fall to 6-3, and the narrative around the Miami Dolphins not being able to win against good teams continues to be a trend. I think it's overblown. I said it last week. I said I'll still continue to think it even if they lose the Chiefs. Yeah, I get it. I get that it's a storyline. I actually understand completely what the notion is, but I think it's being a little over-dramatized, if you will. But there are people that need to talk about these things every day for a living, so I understand that it is fodder, it is headline making news, and there is some accuracy. Obviously, accuracy that the Dolphins' three losses have come against teams that have winning records, but I think to have the success that the Dolphins have had this year against certain teams, that does speak volumes. Against teams that have shown a lot of fight and a lot of promise against other teams, right? This is the National Football League. They're all professionals, and I understand that some teams may not be as high quality as others, but they're all out there with their main goal to win. So I'm not really worried about the Miami Dolphins. I actually thought they played a pretty good defensive game. They held Patrick Mahomes to under 200 yards. He did throw two touchdowns, but only 185 in terms of passing yards. They did keep Travis Kelce really in check, which I was really, really surprised about. 3 catches, 14 yards for less than 5 yards a catch. I was actually really surprised by that. They were able to put pressure on the quarterback. They did have 2 sacks, and they did have a fumble recovery. So I think the defense is improving, and, you know, we'll have to certainly see what happens after their bye week here in week 10. The same can go for Kansas City. You know, they have a great, great defense. I think the best defense Patrick Mahomes has had. After the game, he said, "We're going to get this offense figured out. I promise." I believe that. I think the Kansas City Chiefs, maybe right now, technically, statistically speaking, and what you're seeing on paper and on the field, they are not the scariest team in the NFL, but in my opinion, from what I'm thinking, I think they are, because I really do think that eventually these things are going to start to click offensively. I think they still have the best quarterback in the league. Maybe, you know, not playing it right now, but I think the intangibles and everything going on, the smarts of the been there, the done that, the moxie to know we have been there and done that. I think he's the scariest quarterback in the league. He's continuing to show he has some wheels, and he's scrambling higher or at a higher rate and better than he has in his entire career. This defense continues to play at that level. Whew, man, I do not want to play them down the stretch here in December and then in January when the playoffs come. So Kansas City, 7-2, a well-earned 7-2. It has not been pretty, but they're continuing to do so. So got to tip your cap to that. Now, I think the argument could be made for this team here to be the best team in the NFL right now, and there is absolutely no arguments to be said, and that is the Baltimore Ravens. They absolutely dismantled the Seattle Seahawks 37-3 in Baltimore on Sunday. Man, it was a slugfest. It actually started out relatively slow, if you will. No points in the first quarter, but then the offensive explosion came for the Baltimore Ravens. Unfortunately, it just didn't come for the Seattle Seahawks. So Lamar Jackson playing really, really well right now. Didn't have the gaudiest of games, if you will, but that is something that I think only benefits the Ravens, right? That their ground game was able to be so effective and so dominant. So Lamar Jackson, 21 of 26, 187 yards, no touchdowns, no picks. Then we really saw the ground game come together, right? We saw Gus Edwards get another pair of scores on the ground. And then a lot, as the game was in hand, was cleanup time. We actually saw some Tyler Huntley in this game, who actually looked pretty well. Tyler Huntley is a quarterback I really like. I'll be really fascinated to see if in his career, he's only 25 years old, we'll see if he gets to be a starter somewhere, maybe down the line. I'm really intrigued by that. He was 5 of 7 for 38 yards and a touchdown. Keaton Miller was somebody that really came on. He was an undrafted free agent just this year, only 21 years old, 5'8", 100... I don't have his weight in front of me right now, so pardon me about that. But he came out, 9 rushes, 138 yards, 15 yards a carry, and a touchdown. So, you know, really got to see some great things out of that young undrafted rookie running back. And for a running back room that has been so maligned, right? So many years, we're like, let's get the Baltimore ground game going. We really want to see J.K. Dobbins. Oh no, J.K. Dobbins got hurt. But now it's Gus Edwards' turn, Gus the Bus. And he has, you know, muddled a little bit, but the last few weeks really turned it on. I think that's why the Ravens felt comfortable enough not to overpay for a Derrick Henry or whatnot. So the ground game, if they're chugging along at that space, at that pace, and then they have obviously Lamar Jackson, who had another 60 yards on the ground, but if they have him, and I get that it hasn't necessarily been pretty the last handful of weeks after the offensive explosion we saw against the Lions 2 weeks ago in terms of Lamar through the air, but man, they are so complete right now. They have a great defense that is just humming and clicking on all tunes. They did get 4 sacks on Sunday against the Seahawks. They also had 2 turnovers. That was going to be my friend's fortune. I was going to see, we were going to see Geno on Geno. We talked about Geno Stone on the Halloween episode. I thought he was going to pick off Geno Smith, and he did. But I didn't say that friend's fortune, so I'll just tuck that one in the back of my mind and be like, yeah, I kind of got like a quarter point. Not obviously, it's 3-0 still, but that was obviously fun to see for a player that is just continuing to prove that he is a ball hawk back there in the secondary, and I tip my cap to that. But the Baltimore Ravens, man, this is big. They are 7-2 in the AFC. I don't think anybody wants to play them. They very well could make the claim for the scariest team in the league. Really, really intrigued to see what happens with them down the stretch, because they seem to have exercised some demons, if you will. I talked about the Baltimore Ravens. Last year, I picked them to go to the Super Bowl, right? But I just been hounding them about the inconsistencies that they have had, and they need to get that together. They need to not always play down to competition, if you will. I know that seems a little harsh to say, but sometimes they just don't bring their A game to every game. Right now, this year feels a little bit different. That's not happening. Now, I'm not saying that the 5-2 Seattle Seahawks, they were going to play down to them, because they came in playing very, very well as well. And I think this is a hiccup game, right? I think, like I said, the Baltimore Ravens are one of the scariest teams in the league, and it's okay that the Seattle Seahawks struggled against them. That happened to the Detroit Lions 2 weeks ago, right? I'm not ready to write off any team that struggles against this Ravens team. I think they just had a bad day. Geno Smith, 13 of 28 for a buck 57 in an interception. They weren't able to get the running game going. Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet only combined for 24 yards on 13 carries. Geno added 4 more on 2 more carries, so they were not able to get the ground game going at all. I think that is bread and butter for a Pete Carroll team, right? When they're running, they're going to hum along a lot better. It's going to get those wide receivers going. I will say, I loved seeing some JSN involved. 6 catches, 63 yards. So he's starting to turn it on the last couple of weeks. Remember, he caught the game winning touchdown against Cleveland just the week ago. So this young rookie, I think, starting to put it together, piece it together. The puzzle's coming together, and they're starting to get him more involved. I think that's great, because when he does, it's going to be an even scarier team. Seattle Seahawks fans, don't worry. You'll still got a great team in the NFC. I'm absolutely confident in them moving forward. I like what I saw, but I think they just ran into a buzzsaw this week, and that's okay. Now you get to wash your hands of it and move forward and get better and improve and say, like, yeah, we stubbed our toe. We ran into a great team. Now we get to go out and continue proving that we're a great team as well, and they're going to hopefully do it again this upcoming week. I think the hardest part about doing this by myself is making sure that I'm continuing to breathe. Gotta take a breath sometimes. Move on to the next game, and man, was this exciting or what? The Houston Texans and the Tampa Bay Bucks, 39-37 for the Houston Texans. Now, when I picked the game, I said, I'm going to go with the quarterback that I trust a little bit more, and that is CJ Stroud over Baker Mayfield. Ooh, man, what a game. So, the quarterback I said I didn't trust. Played great. Baker, 21 of 30, 265 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. But man, was this a coming out game for Rashad White? Now, Rashad White played well 2 weeks ago. But 20 carries, 73 yards, not the greatest in terms of yards per carry, 3.6, but 2 touchdowns, which were huge in this game. And you know what? You have to every accolade you can to the Tampa Bay Bucks to score 37 points. Huge. If you do that in a game, you should win. When you score that with under a minute to go, you should win the game. But the quarterback that I said I trusted a little bit more, CJ Stroud. Oh my goodness. Rookie phenom, everybody. 30 of 42, 470 yards, a new NFL yards record for a rookie quarterback. 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. They had next to nothing going on the ground. Devin Singletary was the lead back with Pierce being hurt. 13 carries, 26 yards, a 2-yard average. Now, they did have a nice end around with Xavier Hutchinson, but we'll take that out. So, nothing on the ground. He had to do it through the air, and that pressure did not make him wilt. I'm so impressed with this young guy out of Ohio State. I actually want to go back to our mock draft coverage. I appreciate Adam will take this on the chin. He will say that he was wrong. He was not a believer in CJ Stroud. He texted me that during the day, and I said, don't worry. You have somebody, a co-host, that is right about the quarterbacks. Sometimes, more often than not, you know the running back, so between us, we have a really good pair. Here is the NFL mock draft from Simultaneous Catch talking about CJ Stroud.
CJ Stroud, I hear you about quote-unquote inconsistencies, although I feel like that's super minute minor. I mean, when you're playing the amount of college football games that you play, you're putting up those stats for 2+ years where it's not just you are flashing the pan quarterback. I think that shows pretty good consistency. I like his size. I like his strength. All the things you talked about are valid. I'm on board. I agree that I've think I see C.J. Stroud going three somewhere in a trade, but with it falling the way that it has in our draft so far, I think he's definitely the...
Yes, C.J. Stroud. I like the size. I like the confidence. I like the poise. And we talked about the production in college. That was something that Adam talked about, how he was productive in college with his amount of touchdowns versus his amount of interceptions. And that has not changed in the NFL. The guy has only thrown one NFL interception thus far in the first 9 weeks of his career. That's insane. He's doing so, so well. 14 total touchdowns through the air versus that one interception, like I was saying. He has 2,270 yards thus far in his young career. Man, I don't know. I mean, thinking about rookie success, and we obviously have seen in the last decade or this millennium, great rookie quarterback play. It's just getting better and better in college, so they're coming in and making a smoother transition. But I don't know if I've seen somebody since Andrew Luck maybe have this kind of just success, this poise, this confidence, this calmness in the pocket, being able to maneuver. And he's spreading the ball around. There were three... let me actually check on that. It might have been four for the Texans in that game. Let's go to Stat Guy real fast. There were, yes, three. That's what I thought. Three Texans receivers with over 100 yards. So he's spreading the ball out. He's not locking on. Nico Collins is definitely improving. He actually had one of the smaller games of the day. Tank Dell had 6 for 114. Nico Collins, 3 for 54. Dalton Schultz, 10 for a buck 30. And then Noah Brown, 6 for 153 and a touchdown. So I wouldn't say that the Texans necessarily have a dominant number one. I mean, I really, really like Nico Collins. I really, really like Tank Dell. I think Dalton Schultz was a great signing, especially with what the Texans wanted to do this year. But to say that they have a dominant number one wide receiver, I think that would be a stretch, right? I think most of us would be in that boat. So it's not like C.J. Stroud has a Ja'Marr Chase or a Julio Jones of 10 years ago to be like, hey, like, you're my guy, I'm going to you no matter what, and you're going to get those 300 yards. He spread the ball around really well this past Sunday against the Bucks. Man, I don't even, I could talk and glow and be happy about that for a while. He deserves a rave. He deserves a crush in it. C.J. Stroud, you did great, man. And to lead that game-winning drive, to hit that touchdown strike to Tank Dell when you needed to with, I believe it was 6 seconds left. It may have been 4 seconds left. I'm pretty positive it was six. Hot dog. That was exciting. Good game. All right. The big, big NFC East battle that happened. The Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles. It was a 28-23 victory for the Philadelphia Eagles. Before I even get into this game, I have to say, what a way to lose for Dallas. I actually picked Dallas in this game. I thought they were going to do the opposite of the home field swap in the divisional games. I thought Dallas would win in Philadelphia. Philadelphia would win in Dallas. But Philadelphia, despite having the stats not on their side, almost everything went better for the Dallas Cowboys. Dak performed better than Jalen Hurts. Tony Pollard was technically better than the Eagles running back DeAndre Swift, although both of them played pretty poorly. C.D. Lamb had a much, much better day than A.J. Brown. Everything was on the Cowboys' side except for the score at the end. The thing that I thought was so fascinating about this game is we hear the adage or the saying, football's a game of inches. We hear that all the time, right? It's almost a cliche. It's an adage. But this game personified that. This game was the true definition of how those inches matter. We saw the tight end for the Dallas Cowboys. It wasn't Jake Ferguson. I think it was Luke Schoonmaker have a catch that thought it was going to be a touchdown right at the goal line, but with his knee coming down the way he was and an Eagle defender being right there, really close to interference if you ask me, but it wasn't called that way. He was down and it wasn't a touchdown. It was a failed attempt, and then we saw that on a two-point conversion play for the Dallas Cowboys to make it a three-point game versus a five-point game, which would have been huge at that point in the game. Dak stepped out a yard before crossing and hitting the pylon, so we saw the game of inches. Man, sometimes it's so lame to say those things, to say those cliches, to say those things that we just say to say them, but this game really did exemplify that. It really proved that it really is a game of inches sometimes. But talking about the game, like I said, the Dallas Cowboys technically were better in pretty much every respective way. They had more total yards, 406 to 292. More passing yards by a mile, 333 to 183. Now, the Philadelphia Eagles did have more rushing yards collectively, 109 to 73. But the Cowboys had nearly a full yard more in yards per play, 5-8 compared to 4.9. The Cowboys had more first downs. They weren't as effective on third down as the Philadelphia Eagles were. The Eagles were 50%. The Cowboys were probably around 42, if my math is correct on that. The Cowboys did go for it on 5 fourth downs, converting 3 of them. The Philadelphia Eagles, obviously, with their great execution of things, 2 of 2 on their first downs. They had more total plays. They did allow more sacks. They allowed 5 of those 8 I was talking about. They punted less, only twice compared to 5 of the Eagles. They had the same amount of penalties, both 10, so it was a high penalty game. They did have less penalty yardage during the game, and they did have the one turnover while barely losing the time of possession battle by, 36 seconds, if my math is correct, real quick. So, it was a great NFC East battle. I know Cowboys fans are going to be upset about how it turned out. They probably don't believe in the Philadelphia Eagles right now, think Dallas deserved to win. And I do want to talk about the penalty situation, the last drive situation. I'll talk about that in a minute. But going back to what I said a couple weeks ago when I recalled the Dallas Cowboys winning the division and the Philadelphia Eagles winning the division. Again, this is a team that is not playing pretty football right now. They are not doing it great. They still are having a lot of mistakes, a lot of penalties, but they're getting it done. They're getting it done, and they're doing it in manners that are not wavering. You know, outside of the Commanders last week when they were down 14-0, we haven't seen the Philadelphia Eagles get down into crazy holes and have to drag their and claw their way out. We have seen them always be in games, always be competitive, and they're winning. They right now are a league best 8-1. They are the best team in terms of record in the league right now, and it's hard to argue against it. Sure, they didn't have the gaudy stats the Cowboys had on Sunday, but they got the victory and they executed when they needed to, and when X, Y, or Z happened, they had those answers. But let's talk about that last drive, shall we? So, the Dallas Cowboys, with about 5 minutes left, get the ball back. They're down 23-28. You're thinking, all right, here's the opportunity, Dak. Let's go win the game. That doesn't happen, and they're forced to punt. They actually hold the Philadelphia Eagles to a 3-and-out. They get the ball back. Not that much time. And then it becomes a crazy, crazy game. The Philadelphia Eagles give them almost half the field in penalty yardage. They're getting all the way down. The Dallas Cowboys are down to the 6-yard line. And then they implode with their own penalties or their own negative yardage plays. And they get backed up to like the 30-yard line. And they're forced to go with a mini baby Hail Mary to CeeDee Lamb, who catches it about the 5-4 yard line. There's no one to lateral to because everyone ran the go routes, so they can't lateral. There's linemen like 10 yards, 15 yards down behind CeeDee Lamb. So I think the plan was probably to try to do some sort of lateral, but there was just nobody there because everyone was in the end zone, right? But man, this was a crazy, crazy end. And I can't think of a more, I'm sorry to say it, Dallas way to lose, though. I mean, they had it. They were gifted so much. They were down to the 6-yard line with like 20 seconds to go. And I said to my fiance as I was watching the game, I was like, Dallas has this. Oh my gosh, they did it. They're going to capitalize on these mistakes that the Eagles made that they needed to do in that game. And they didn't do it. And I was like, oh no. But it was a fun game. It was a really, really fun game. The matchup against in Dallas, I should say, is going to be so much fun to watch. We'll have to see. You know, we were talking about, or the pundits, or the narrative was, Philadelphia has a really tough schedule the last handful of weeks. They had to play the Dolphins 2 weeks ago, and then they had to play the Commanders, which divisional games are always tough, right? And Washington plays them especially tough. And then they had the Dallas Cowboys, and how, you know, the Dallas Cowboys can technically get ahead of these Philadelphia Eagles and take that crown. It's there. But they haven't done it. They've just continued to improve. They have a 2-game lead, 2.5, if you will, lead on the Dallas Cowboys for the divisional crown right now. So we might see for the first time in, I can't remember the exact stat, 20 years, that we will have a repeating champion from the NFC East. It's going to be quite a show these last handful of months in the NFL to see what happens. But the Philadelphia Eagles, as long as they're healthy, and we did see Jalen Hurts have an injury scare at the end of the first half, but he came out and he played well. Think everything's okay on that front. We'll have to see. As long as everyone's healthy, I think the NFL and the NFC still runs through the Philadelphia Eagles. Oh man. And then the last game I want to talk about real quick, I won't talk about it for very long. I did give a shout out to Joshua Dobbs for his performance against the Falcons, 31-28 for the Minnesota Vikings. We will see Taylor Heinicke again after this week. He is going to start again against the Arizona Cardinals. He performed fairly well, 21 of 38, 268, a touchdown and an interception. He did add something on the ground, 3-yard carries for 20 yards, so not a ton, but a little bit. But 28 points for the Falcons. We haven't seen a lot of offensive production out of them very consistently, and I think that's why Arthur Smith went with Taylor Heinicke. He's going to get the start again against the Arizona Cardinals. Adam stopped in my office this afternoon, and he thinks that Desmond Ridder is done. Now, Arthur Smith did say they're going to take the bye week to evaluate. They have the Cardinals, like I said a couple of times, then their bye week. They're going to evaluate the quarterback situation, but Adam thinks this is Taylor Heinicke's team right now. I don't know. The Falcons are so intriguing to me right now because they have all of those skill players that we've always liked so much and that made Adam fall in love with his team. The team right now, though, needs to get Bijan Robinson going again. He only had 11 carries for 51 yards. He seems like a player, and obviously you don't want to overwork him. He's not the biggest back in the world. You don't want to put him in injuries way, but he's a back that needs to get going. When you have a guy of this talent and he only has 13 touches in the football game for less than 60 yards, that's not enough. That's not getting the job done for what they invested in this guy, for what he can be, and for what he can do for the team in terms of helping them win games. We have seen that already this year, that he can be the deciding factor in getting a win or a loss. He can make those plays and he can have that impact. We just need to get it going a little bit more. Tyler Allgeier, a back I still really, really like, did have 12 carries, 39 yards, and a touchdown. The Falcons versus the Cardinals, we'll talk about that in Pal's Picks here in a minute, which is actually going to lead me into it. Pal's Picks. Oh, yeah. Not quite as good as Adam, but I'll take what I can. So, we had a good week in terms of our picks. I'm pulling it up right now. I went a perfect 3-0. Adam went 2-1, so I'm still down. I'm 13-14. Adam is 18-9, so I'm 5 games behind still. Still got some major climbing to do, but I am going to get there. Or I'm going to at least try my very darn best, and that's all we can do, right? Adam got to give me the games first this week, and he gave me the first game he gave me was the Tennessee Titans and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Oh, man, what a game. So we have Will Levis and then Baker Mayfield, who last week I said I didn't trust quite as much, but he lit it up and played really, really, really well, right? This is a fascinating game to me, one that I'm actually really struggling to pick. I am going to go, though, with the Tennessee Titans in this game. I think Will Levis just continues to get a little bit going on, a little more confidence. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense is not as ferocious or scary as the Steelers defense. And I think Derrick Henry is going to perform better running than Singletary did last week, or that Henry's able to get going against the Steelers. He did okay against the Steelers, but I'm going to go with the away team on this one. I'm going with the Tennessee Titans in this game. The second game he gave me, oh man, he gave me some doozies this week. You know, week 10 isn't necessarily like, oh man, like this is a great marquee matchup, but there are some really great games. The second game he gave me is the Lions heading out to LA to take on the Chargers. The Lions coming off their bye week, the Chargers coming off a short week. They just played last night in New York. I'm gonna go with the away team again. So we talk about Jared Goff on the road versus Jared Goff at home. Now, I will say this is on the road, but it is in a dome. There aren't going to be environmental factors going on in this game. The Lions coming off their bye week versus the Chargers coming off a short week, which they still had to travel. They still had to go coast to coast, right? They were just in New York last night. So this is still kind of a short week for them and traveling. I'm going with the Lions. They're in the safety of a dome. They're coming off their bye week. Gonna get David Montgomery back, even though Jahmyr Gibbs is coming off the explosion we saw against the Raiders a couple weeks ago. Both of those could be a ferocious two-headed monster. Obviously have Amon-Ra, obviously have Sam Laporta, who have been crushing it. I'm going with the road team once again. And then the third game that Adam gave me, the New York Jets. We just talked about them playing last night against the Chargers, taking on those revitalized Raiders. Am I going with a road sweep? I think I am, everybody. I'm going with the New York Jets in this one. I think this comes down to the Jets defense executing against this rookie quarterback, Aiden O'Connell, making his third career start. And I've liked some of the poise. I've liked some of the consistency and confidence that I've seen out of Aiden O'Connell. But right now, I think the Jets defense is just so good. We saw them make Justin Herbert's life really, really, really difficult last night. And obviously, they had to rely a little bit on Austin Eckler. They had two touchdowns out of him, and then they had the special teams touchdown. I think the Raiders, they have Josh Jacobs. He hasn't necessarily gotten going quite yet. I don't think this is the game that he gets going against this defense, and I think the defense for the Jets carries them once again. It's just hard, right? It's hard to trust this New York Jets offense with everything going on, with the struggles we've seen, especially out of last night. I think for the first time in probably close to a month, I've just been like, Zach Wilson can't do it. He's not doing it. He's doing a bad job. I've come down off that train. I've been more confident in Zach Wilson. Now, does that mean that for a month I was like, yeah, he's doing okay? I mean, it's hard to say when, you know, the Giants game, no team did anything, right? But he got it done. Does that mean that last night was an outlier? Or were those couple of weeks an outlier? I don't know. But I do think, you know, the Raiders are suspect against the run. Saquon Barkley was able to get going pretty well. Breece Hall's coming to town. He's one of my favorite running backs in the league. I think it's great to see him out there. I'm going with the road sweep, everybody. Going with the Titans over the Bucks, the Lions over the Chargers, and the Jets over the Raiders. I could be completely wrong about all three of those because that's what this week is and this is tough, but it's absolutely fun as heck. All right, so I got to pull up my text messages because I gave Adam the games and he did give me his tidbits or his things to share. So the first game that I gave Adam was the Saints traveling up to Minnesota to take on Joshua Dobbs and those Vikings. He said he's taking the Vikings. Here's what he had to say. Ride the Dobbs wave, man. I'm a little bummed for Jaren Hall. Absolutely, did talk about that. That first drive was legitimately impressive, but the Dobbs story is just too gold, too good, and he played too well to not keep the role. I absolutely agree. Joshua Dobbs is the starter of the Minnesota Vikings now. Last week, I did talk about the Saints and how the gumbo had to come together, and they continue to put together. They are now technically leading the NFC South with the winning record of 5-4. So not necessarily the sexiest division out there, but Adam is taking the Vikings in the home game. I don't know if I've seen this game in this since the Minneapolis Miracle. That was a great game. Great game. Maybe we'll see those sparks again this week. Let's hope. Adam's taking the Vikings. Second game I gave Adam was the 49ers and the Jaguars. The 49ers are heading to Jacksonville, both teams coming off their bye. Here's what Adam had to say. He said he's taking the 49ers. For the second straight season, San Francisco gets a shiny new weapon before the bye week. The rush will be too much for the Jags, and the 49er offense will shine with the extra time they have had to prepare. Both teams have had time to prepare. We had to talk about that, but that shiny new weapon for everybody that doesn't remember, Chase Young coming over from the Commanders. It's going to be ferocious to see those two Ohio State edge rushers on the same team once again and see what they do against Lawrence and the Jaguars. And then the final game that I gave Adam was his Atlanta Falcons traveling to take on the Arizona Cardinals. Now, here's what Adam had to say. He's taking the Falcons. The only thing that makes me nervous is Kyler Murray's return. It could happen and be wildly impressive, or it could fall flat. I'll go with the Falcons, assuming they have more good pieces to outweigh the better quarterback if Murray plays. Now, like I said, Kyler Murray, barring anything happening in the next couple of days, is slated to play. As far as today's practice, I heard nothing negative that happened. So I believe the expectation is still that he is out there. He is activated. Nothing as of our Tuesday recording that has been a setback. He's slated to come back and start the game. And we will certainly see how that audition goes on Sunday. So a little recap real quick. Excuse me. Getting a little tickle in the throat. Adam is taking the Vikings at home, the 49ers on the road, and the Falcons on the road as well. So there we go with Pal's picks. Just trying to claw my way back into it. Got to keep my head up. That's what it's about. Just got to keep trying, everybody. Keep on trying. Oh, man. So let's head to some fantasy corner. Man, I'm going to complain for a second about fantasy football. It's the every fantasy manager's worst nightmare, and it's that every week, every team, no matter who they are, brings their absolute best against you, and it's such a bummer when it happens. So we did drop a really tough one yet again. Pulling up our league right now, so we have fallen quite significantly. We're 5-4. We're down to the 4 spot. So we dropped 2 spots. And like I said, we have just been smacked in the face every week all year. We have the most points against us so far. We still have the second most points for, no longer the first. Number one ranked Kamish has the most points in the league, so he is crushing it. But I will say we have gotten our reinforcements back, right? So the Lions players, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Sam Laporta, back in action. We do have our quarterback Jalen Hurts on his bye week, so we are going to put Will Levis up there against Tampa. I picked the Tennessee Titans to win. Hopefully that is behind a strong Will Levis game. And you know what? I think especially with this being a tight end premium league, I'm rolling pretty confidently with our two rookie tight ends. So we have seen Dalton Kincaid now 2 weeks in a row have a monster games. He had 11 targets, 10 catches against Cincinnati for 81 yards. Did not get into the end zone and did have that costly fumble. But we've seen him be so involved. He's had at least 7 targets in the last 3 weeks. I think that continues to roll on Monday night. Dalton Kincaid is absolutely in there. And then Sam Laporta, the guy that's been doing it all year. He has had 28 targets the last 3 weeks before the bye. Taking on the Chargers, keeping that guy in there as well. Having two tight ends in our tight end and our flex spot. Feel really, really confident about that. Going to have to look for a new kicker because of Kyemi Fairbairn's injury. Oh my gosh, I didn't even talk about that. How awesome that was. Not the injury, the response to it. But going to be looking for a new kicker, but nobody wants to talk about kickers, right? So I'm going to talk about a fantasy player of the week and somebody that I feel actually pretty excited about if we're talking about tight ends, which I'm a tight end guy. I love tight ends. He's probably available in your leagues. If you need a tight end for a streamer, if somebody's on bye, or if you're just looking for somebody to go, Cade Otton. Cade Otton played really, really well. He had 9 targets, 6 receptions, 70 yards, 2 touchdowns. I have liked Cade Otton since he was drafted last year. This was absolutely his best game of, I would say, probably his career. So, you know, a building off point, building a really good rapport with Baker. So Cade Otton is somebody definitely that I'm excited and gravitate towards. So if he's available, go and get him. Another player, if you're not looking for a tight end, that I feel really good about, another second-year player, and it is a Buffalo Bill. It is Khalil Shakir. He is a player that Adam and I have been screaming to get more involved. He deserves to be out there. He's so talented, and when he is targeted, he produces. The last three weeks, he has been targeted 14 times. He has brought in the ball 14 times. He is turning it on, especially the last 2 weeks. I know against Cincinnati, he only had 4 targets, 4 catches, 57 yards, but he needs to get involved, and he has been continuing to prove that he is a reliable weapon for Josh Allen outside of Stephon Diggs, outside of Dalton Kincaid. I'm really curious to see, though, because of Kincaid's massive infusion and reliance. I don't say that word negatively, if that will impact Khalil Shakir, but a player I really, really like. Watch out for him. If he's available, go and get him activated, get him ready to go. I feel really good about him moving forward. If you're looking for a spot start this week, I'm actually about Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon has been turning it on a little bit. I know he stubbed his toe kind of a little bit against the Buffalo Bills in terms of what he was able to do on the ground, but he also saw a season high in targets and a season high in receptions, second highest of the year or the season in terms of yardage, but getting him involved in the air game could turn him into a really good weapon. I like firing him up against Houston this week as well. All right, let's get on to some friends' fortune. Don't have to have anybody run out. I don't have to whisper. I can talk for as long as I want without somebody walking in and finding out what I'm talking about. So here we go. I'm going to go to the LA Chargers hosting the Detroit Lions. I said I'm picking the Lions, but this is a matchup of wide receivers that I actually really like. My guy Keenan Allen has been one of my favorite wide receivers for so, so long. And then Amon-Ra St. Brown has kind of been the new wave, the new age of that wide receiver. I really, really like him. I'm going to go with those two guys. Between those two guys, we're going to see at least 23 targets, at least 17 catches, at least 140 yards, and at least 1 touchdown between those two wide receivers, just them. Everything else that everybody else does, Sam Laporta and Craig Reynolds and Donald Parham and Austin Eckler, what they do doesn't matter. Between those two guys, 23 targets, at least 17 catches, at least 140 yards, at least, and 1 touchdown between those two. So there we go. It's going to be a fun game in LA. I'm expecting some shootouts, which means it's going to be 6-3. But that'd be interesting as well. All right, everybody. So Adam wants me to talk about the Buffalo Bills real quick. And his cold read to me is, why are they so bad? Well, first off, they're not. They're not bad. So he did provide these stats and he wants me to talk about them. This year, the Bills have the 3rd fewest punts in the NFL. The Bills have average the 4th most yards per possession. The Bills average the 2nd most points per drive. The Bills have the 3rd most points, and the Bills have their best offensive EPA per drive in football. The Bills have the 2nd best point differential in football. Wow, that's all a lot of great things. That's nice. That's all good. They are 5-4, so they are struggling a little bit. The answer is, I don't know. Seeing these things, I think obviously it means to me that stats don't correlate to winning football games. I talked earlier about the Dallas Eagles game. The Dallas Cowboys had better statistics in most important categories, but they lost the football game. So right now, I think the Bills are obviously, they're struggling on a little bit of both sides of the ball. They, on Cincinnati on Sunday night, they came out fast and responded to a Cincinnati touchdown. And you're like, 7-7, okay, here we go. And then they stalled. for quite a significant amount of time until the final drive of the second half, which they weren't able to capitalize on in terms of points because of a penalty. So they weren't able to capitalize on that. But we've seen the offense get too stagnant too many times. So seeing the stats about the third fewest punts and things like that is a little bit surprising to me, because I don't think it's been necessarily a flawless or well-executed offense at times. Yeah, I talked to Adam a few weeks ago on the show. I think the team right now has just been, they've been in a transition period, right? Of not having Josh Allen play the backyard Superman football, which, you know, sometimes they need to do. Sometimes they need to have the backyard football or the hurry up offense to let that roll, to get that going, to get into that groove, and they're not doing it. Right now, one of the things that bugs me the most about listening to people talk about the Bills is saying that they just need a run game. They can't run the football. That's not true. I think they're fairly efficient in running the football. James Cook has done well. It's just the thing we've seen over the last handful of years. We saw it with Devin Singletary as well. How many times did we hear Adam say, Devin Singletary's running the football well, they just don't have him do it that often, and we're seeing that. They went away from that. At the beginning of the year, they were being so committed to the run. They were letting the running backs go and go and go and have 15, 18, 20 plus carries a game. And we're not seeing that the last handful of weeks. I'm not exactly sure why that is. I think obviously everything executes better when you do have the threat of the running game. But right now, the Bills aren't committing to the run, which is allowing players or defenses to key in on Josh Allen to help collapse the pocket a little bit more and to add that pressure to Josh Allen, and he's not getting out quite as much. I will say again, no, they started talking about it a little bit on Sunday night. The shoulder injury concerns me with Josh Allen right now. I texted Adam. I was like, what's going on? I get that it's not being talked about a lot right now. He has missed a practice or whatnot, but it's always been, I'm fine. I'm good to go. I think it's lingering. He's obviously being out there and being effective on the football field. It's not like he can't throw the football, but I think that's the thing. I think something's bothering him. I'm intrigued by this. The Buffalo Bills, we talked about it. Come November, they have a gauntlet of a stretch. They have Denver coming off their bye on Monday night. Probably as close to a must win as you need to get right now, because after that, after Denver, you have the Chiefs. You have the Eagles, you have the Cowboys, you have the Dolphins again, you have the Jets again. Man, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens here down the stretch for the Buffalo Bills. Right now, they're sitting middle of the pack, 5-4. If the playoffs ended today, they'd be out. Actually, you know what's crazy is every team in the AFC North would be in. I don't think I've ever seen that. It obviously probably won't end up that way, but good for the AFC North, right? But yeah, the Buffalo Bills, they have stubbed their toe a little bit. This is not the team that is the juggernaut of 2020 or the 2021 playoffs. So, you know, we'll have to see. We'll have to see what's going on. They have obviously been dealing with their defensive injuries, which we have talked about and well documented, so I won't talk about that anymore. But yeah, I mean, in my opinion, they have played this far like a 5-4 team, and that's okay. That's still good. That's still a winning record. That's not taking anything away from the Bills. I think they are a good football team. I think they are a playoff contending football team. I'm not worried about that right now. Obviously, they have a really big stretch coming up that they're going to need to win some games. I think they're absolutely contending for the playoffs. They have that talent. Do I think they're a Super Bowl team? No, I don't think they are, despite all these great stats that have been talked about and presented there. I don't think that they're there. So that is what I have to say about the Buffalo Bills, and that I say that with nothing but respect. Like I said, I think they're good. I think they can compete with anybody, but I don't think they can necessarily beat anybody. I think we saw that on Sunday night against the Bengals. Here is a fun tidbit I didn't know that I really want to share. The Titans have had 31 undrafted players play for them this season. That's the most in the NFL. 13 have started before, 7 have started 6-plus games. No other team has more than 4. That's pretty cool. That is showing that that coaching staff can really cultivate a culture to bring talent out of a player that puts them in the position to really succeed and do well. And I think that's really great. That's a cool tidbit, and I think a great huge compliment to Mike Vrabel. So I appreciate that tidbit provided by our research team of Adam Jeffrey Rossi. So that is cool. And then Sam Laporta, coming off his bye, is the first tight end with 40 plus receptions, 400 plus receiving yards, and 4 receiving touchdowns in his first 8 games. He was on bye last week. Like I said, I expect there to be some high flying excitement over there in LA. We'll see what he does, and hopefully it's a lot for our fantasy team as we rely on him to get us back on the winning side. All right, everybody. Hot dang. First episode of Solo Catch, week 10 of the NFL, the first bye week for Adam Jeffrey Rossi of the year. You are listening to Simultaneous Catch. My name is Josh Lapping. I hope y'all are doing great. I hope y'all have a great week 10 in the NFL. Your teams do exactly what you wanted to do, which I know half of them aren't going to because half are going to lose, but that's why we love our sport, everybody. So everybody, enjoy week 10, and we will see you later.